The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
Let's go ahead and turn over to Proverbs 25. There was a gray-haired older man. He was German by nationality. And he told a story in which he said, "Every Sunday we heard it. We could hear the whistle of the train in the distance, and we could hear the wheels coming down the tracks," he said. And he said, "We became very disturbed when we heard the cries coming from the train, because we realized it was carrying Jews the way people carry cattle in their cattle cars. And week after week, the whistle would blow and the train would come. We dreaded to hear the sound of those wheels as they drew closer. We knew we'd hear the cries as they went to the death camp. The screams tormented us," he said. "We knew that the time that the train would come, and we desperately tried to drown out the vision that was in our mind of what was going on. When we heard the whistle blow, we began singing hymns. Eventually, the train came past our church, and we'd sing at the top of our voices, and we heard the screams, and we sang louder and louder to drown them out. Soon we heard them no more. Years have passed," he said, "and no one talks about it much anymore, but I can still hear that train whistle in my sleep at night and in my head. I can still hear them crying out, 'Help us, help us.'" And the man said, "God forgive us. We called ourselves Christians, yet we did nothing that a Christian would do to help those people." So here were these German people in this village, and they had a vision in their head of themselves. They were nice, decent, quiet, peace-loving people who lived in that village, and that's how they saw themselves. But after a while, they completely lost that vision. They feared being criticized by others. They feared getting in trouble with the local police. And by hiding from their conscience, nothing motivated them to do anything. The result, they did nothing. Later, they would weep and wonder what happened to them. Many did. There were people, some that committed suicide, I understand. You know, but I'll tell you this. A man with the right vision in his head can overcome any obstacles. These men rejected the vision in their head and didn't pay attention to it in Germany. But others will tell you that it's so important to have a clear vision in your head of what is right and what is wrong. And others can tell you that your vision can't be obtained, but don't believe the critics, because not one of them is for you, you know. And my point is that your vision is for yourself. And just in my lifetime, I have seen so many innovations, so many discoveries, so many inventions, that it is just amazing to me when you think about it. You know, back historically, people thought the earth was flat, and then Columbus had a vision that it was round, and he went out and proved it and found the Americas. And look what has happened since then. Think about it. Einstein said the maximum speed a car could ever go in a quarter mile was 60 miles an hour. And we used to get on the drag strip and we used to watch them race. We were already hitting over 100. But you know what it is now? It's 336 miles in a quarter of a mile you can go. You know what the record land speed is? It's an unbelievable, undreamed of 763 miles per hour. Who would have ever dreamed you could go that fast on land in a car of one kind? You know, Edison invented direct current. This was a magnificent invention in itself. He made the light bulb, but then he fought a man named Tesla because Tesla had invented AC current, and Edison had invested everything in DC current, and he kept telling the whole world, AC will never work. It will never work. Don't buy into this. Today we light entire cities with AC current. It's the basis by which we do all of this wireless connection that we do. I mean, it's become so big. Watson of IBM said the market for computers in his time was probably 5 in the whole world. 77, Ken Olson of Digital Equipment said there was no reason to have one in your house. Today, 76% of American households have a computer in them. Do you understand my point that people have a vision of something and other people want to knock it down, other people want to discolor it, other people want to dissuade you from attaining it? But don't listen to the critics. Follow your vision, because vision is so important. If you have a clear vision of what you want to attain, you can do it given enough time, because that's something I've learned through all of this. You can't fight people that have a vision. They build a passion within themselves that cannot be stopped, and those who have a vision tend to pour themselves into it. I remember reading the book Outliers, and it showed that Steve Jobs spent 10,000 hours. They said 10,000 hours is what it takes to become really great. And Steve Jobs spent 10,000 hours just working, computing, computers, programming computers every single day. The book told how the Beatles were just an average band, or even below average in some people's eyes, and that they got a job where they had to go play every single day, all day long, and they couldn't just have one or two songs they played real good. They had to make up different songs and have a wide repertoire of music, and that made them great musicians in the world's eyes. 10,000 hours they spent. And it was also the Bill Gates who spent 10,000 hours studying software before he was able to come up with Microsoft. Mankind is made to do this, as it says here in Proverbs 25 and verse 2. It is the glory of God to conceal a thing, but the honor of kings is to search out a matter. And so you understand, God didn't tell us every single thing that we could do technologically in life. He lets us dig it out. He lets us discover it. He lets us catch a vision in our mind, and then we build that vision. And he lets us do that. And he says it's the glory of kings to do this. Smart people, wise people, big people. And we are destined to be kings and priests in the kingdom of God. And it's for us to dig things from the scriptures, as we heard even this morning, to dig those things out and help them make sense for other people. Let's go over to Proverbs 29. These people that I talked about, they didn't have any money, they didn't have any reputation, they had nothing, no fame, no name, and yet they were successful. But they had inside them a magnificent obsession, and they had that as a vision. They could see it in their mind, what might possibly be able to be accomplished, and they wouldn't stop, and they wouldn't stop, they wouldn't put it down. And to me, there's an enormous lesson from what these people have done and what these other people in Germany did not do. There is a great lesson for you and me, and it's in Proverbs 29 here in verse 18, where it says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish. But he that keeps the law, happy is he." A profound statement, isn't it? Without a vision, the people lose sight of what's right and what's wrong. Let's go to 1 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 2. During times when there's no vision, the people are kind of stripped of the knowledge, stripped of their hopes. They lose sight of what is right and what is wrong in many cases. And they end up seeking pleasure primarily in their lives. They become argumentative with people very easily, and it produces a divisiveness among them when they don't have a straight vision that they're following. You know, they may have had an earlier vision at one time. There's numerous people in the Church of God that had the vision, and they lost it because the religious teachers stopped preaching their value. They stopped preaching the value of the law, and they stopped preaching the importance of understanding the consequences for not following that law. And it results in a people who become ungovernable. They don't work together. And this is what is happening to the Church of God today. Part of the vision is sometimes preached, but how to attain that vision is very seldom told because not very many know. And here the word vision means either a spoken oracle or actually a vision that you see. And that's not going to happen to us, I don't think. You know, we're not going up to the third heaven like John and see that vision. But yet we have a vision just from reading the scriptures. We know, and you can't tell me anybody here that can't recite the Ten Commandments by heart. You understand? We have the vision. We have the knowledge. We've seen the New Jerusalem. We've seen what it looks like. We've seen our future. And we've got to keep that in our minds and in our hearts. It's got to be what drives us on. So anyway, we have the living scriptures. 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 7. Here's what Paul said about this. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery. Even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world existed unto our glory, which none of the princes of this world knew, for had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, eye has not seen nor ear heard, neither has entered into the heart of man the things that God has prepared for those who love him. And you can read these great books by famous poets. You can read these books by that are scientific journals. You can read the books by atheists if you want, you know. And you're not ever going to find truth. But yet we who didn't have it, who didn't see it, we've been given it. In verse 10, but God has revealed those things to us by his Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. This, to me, is an awe-inspiring truth that we, of all people, I can't hardly believe it, that we would know the purpose of life. They don't know, the scientists don't know why the universe exists. And yet we know. And we're just living here in this house, on this block, in this street, and nobody knows us. It's a phenomenal point to me that this handful of people in the world have a vision of what life is about and what the plan of God is. And we have enough pieces from what we can read and what we've heard in sermons and what has been preached to us. We have enough of those pieces that we can see what the overall picture looks like. And I remember when I used to do these jigsaw puzzles and I'd get pieces, you know, and they'd fit here and I'd find a piece that'd fit there. I still couldn't tell, but eventually you had enough pieces where you could tell what the picture was. And that's where we sit in our minds. We've got enough pieces from this book that we know what the plan looks like. We know what God's doing. We know what's happening with this world and with the people of God. This is so vital to understand this, that we have enough pieces to know that at his right hand there are pleasures forevermore. We know there's a new world coming, and we know it's going to be a world filled with justice. It's going to be a world that's fair and decent and creative, and it's going to be liberating for millions of people around this world that live from the bark on trees and sometimes put dirt in their stomachs just to stop the pain. That's a great world that's coming, and we have a privileged opportunity to have an integral part of that world. We got to keep it in mind. You understand? We got to think about it. We got to be able to see it. And it's got to be what motivates us, not a new car or a bigger house or more and more money, because it's all going away. But something permanent is coming. Matthew 33. Notice that verse that I read that I feel is so important also said, without the vision, the people perish. But then it says, happy is he who keeps the law. And I say this because these things are so closely related. They are tied together in a way that I think is simply unbreakable. In all honesty, it reverberates on every single page of the Bible. It's there over and over and over again. And this is what it's really saying. Verse 33 of chapter 6, Matthew 6. But seek you first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. And so you understand we're going to go to the feast, and a lot of people are going to be talking about this vision of the kingdom of God, and they don't understand the way to attain that vision is right here, attaining the righteousness of God or of Christ. These words have to carry some impact in our life. They have to carry a lot of impact. And again, it's got to be what motivates us. It can't be some other thing is more important, and then God's Bible and his truth and his plan is sort of on the side, and it's nice too, you know. But without someone to preach it, how are people going to have a vision if they don't preach it? Because you know what I hear? Not all the time, but I hear people preaching that it's okay to do business on the Sabbath. That's what they preach. And they teach that it's okay to give your money on the Day of Atonement. You know, and they teach, honestly, either straight out, but it's mostly under the table kind of teaching, and that is that the church is really what's the most important thing, and your loyalty to the church is really what makes you spiritual or not. And that's completely false, as is those other ideas that people have. But you understand, all you need is a few times to get off. And I remember a man teaching me once about shooting, and he said, if you're just one tiny fraction of an inch off here, you're going to be feet off over there. And you understand my point. If we get off too far off here, if we're not preaching the truth the way it really says it and the way God really means it, we could be way off when the end comes. So far off that he says, hey, I didn't know you. You were lawlessness. You know, you weren't keeping the law. Well, I did this, and I set up chairs, and I did everything for the church and everything, and, you know, and I went to Spokesman's Club, and, you know, really. But what about my Ten Commandments? You know, what about that? What about that? Because that's how we're going to live in the kingdom, got it? This is how we're going to live. These are the rules we live by. You want to get there, you got to keep the rules to get there. And that's his point over and over again. And we've got to, I believe, understand this before we ever are going to be in the kingdom. And this is what Mr. Armstrong taught us, was the very first, I believe, of the laws that are the rules for success. You have to have a worthwhile goal. What is it? What is on your mind most of the time during the week? What is on your mind for your goal? Is it the kingdom? Is that what we're seeking? Is it what's guiding our decisions? Or is it something else? I would say in a lot of cases, it's something else, like what's on TV tonight, you know? Or what are we going to see, you know? My point is, there's coming a world that is going to be so different from this. This one has to be completely wiped away. And that world is going to be so good and so kind and so fair as people get healed of these horrible diseases that this world suffers now. And this has to be the magnificent goal of our vision. If we don't maintain that vision, we're going to be like those German people, and we're going to weep and be sorrowful, tragically sorrow. And we're going to wonder, why didn't we do more? And I don't want to be there. I don't want to be there. I want to do what I can now. So ask us to think about it. What is motivating how we live? What is motivating us on a daily basis? We really see the value of our calling, We see how valuable this is. I mean, how many people in the world are even called? And then it says many are called, but only a few are chosen. Well, what's going to make the difference? It's going to be the way they follow God's law. Are they making their own decisions on how they want to keep the law? Are they making up what they want to do? Is it all about them? Or is it about him? That has to be what's the basis here, you know. But how do we regard the vision that God gave us? Because we've seen this happen over and over again. I mean, at least I have in jobs, you know, that we work. We go to work and we watch people pad the hours. We watch them waste time doing nothing, you know. They pad the job with useless hours. They find less and less to do over time. And they like it like that. They actually do. They have no joy in what they do. They don't see that they're only putting in time to get a paycheck. They have no vision motivating them in their job. You've seen this. Haven't you seen it at work? I've seen it at work. And then I got an email. And there was a picture of Congress. And a man speaking down here doing his best to get some legislation passed. And there are all these people that were just bored and looking the other way. There were other people that were on their computer. They're playing computer games while he's giving a speech about legislation that's in his heart. These guys are getting paid to play computer games while someone's pouring out the reason why we should make this piece of legislation. What happened to them? Because I read a story about a man who went into Congress and how he had a vision in the beginning. He wanted to change our country. He wanted to get away from the graft and the corruption that was there. And he said all it took was 6 months. The system moves you away from your family and away from your home and away from your friends, gets you in a new location, and then they have what they call lobbyists who are being paid to give you anything you want. Money? You want money? Fine. You want a woman? Two women? Three women? Whatever your fetish is, whatever your sickness is, we'll give it to you if you vote in our direction. And he apologized. It was an anonymous letter. This is the truth. A man was saying, the system is too overwhelming. You think you can change it, but you can't. Because you can't go against these other men's selfishness. It's overwhelming. So people don't see their work as having great impact. And I think this is a huge mistake. And I just want to mention it kind of as an aside here, you know, that in all honesty, this is when we're most godlike. This is when we can use creativity and we can design a plan to make our job better. And we should invest ourselves in that job. And it lets us make a difference in the world. It may be a small difference, but you understand by making these small differences for good that God is watching this and he's saying this individual, or this man or this woman will make a difference in the kingdom for good. And our job is one of the most important ways we do this. One of the most godlike things we get to do, to be able to plan out a solution to a problem and work that solution. And so the Bible speaks of it in Colossians 3. Colossians 3. I think that having a job and working, you know, the money part is nice. But that's not the point. I've just found the money always comes quality. You do quality work, you'll always have a job. You'll always have money. You don't have to even think about it. It's going to happen. But you can see in the workplace some display that unique vision. I'm sure you've seen it. And they use their job as an outlet for creativity. And they do the best they can, and they're motivated by that. It becomes part of their identity, and they want to do better, and they're motivated to try to do better and improve their work that they do. They constantly are trying to improve it. I've seen people like that, and I love to work with people like that. They have a vision, And when I was an apprentice, I worked with sometimes jurymen who had that vision. And I got some of that from them. And they were inspiring men working on machinery, if you can believe it. But it was fun. It was great fun. Anyway, Colossians 3:22. Servants, obey all things, your masters according to the flesh. Of course, this could be a boss at work. Not with eye service as men pleasers. Anybody ever see that happen when the boss comes in? Everybody gets real busy. Ever see that? As not as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord and not unto men, knowing that the Lord, you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. Now, are you making that connection that God is looking at how you work at your job and he's going to reward you according to that if you're working for him? We should be working for him, shouldn't we? That should be part of our vision, part of our goal. Yes, number 13. It should live in us every day, that vision. I know there's some days that it's probably there less than other days, but I'm saying, look, I'm telling you right now, for this reason, that we start praying about having this vision, about being given the vision, about remembering the vision, about living according to the vision, about repenting when we don't. That's why I'm giving the message today. I want us to pay attention to it. It should guide all we do and all we think. So here are some people that lacked vision. They came to Moses and they were ready to go into the promised land, and they said, well, maybe we should search out the land. Now, what do you think these guys were doing? You know, were they think they were helping God? God could have said, I'm going to take you in and I'm going to give you the land. You know, it doesn't matter what it looks like or who's in it or anything. That they're doing this so that they know. They want to know, is it going to be easy or hard? You know, should we really go through with this? That's why they're asking. So, they ask God, ask Moses. Moses asks God, and God says, yeah, go ahead. So they come back, verse 17. And Moses sent them out to spy out the land in Canaan, and they said unto them, get you up this way southward and go into the mountain and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwell therein, if they're strong or weak or few or many. And what land is it they dwell in, whether it's good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds. And I think God is laughing, you know. Like, I picked this place. I'm going to give it to you. You're going to succeed, you know, and you're coming to check to see if it's going to be okay, you know. It's like, God, do you think we need to know what the kingdom's going to be like to pursue it? Or do you think you can just believe God? Well, I think we can believe him. Look what he was willing to do for us in order that we could inherit it. And see what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood or not, and be of good courage and bring us the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes, so they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin to Rehob as the man came to Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron where Heman, Shishai and Talmai, not good, children of Anak were there. Now Hebron was built 7 years before. And they came unto the brook, and they cut down from there the branch of one of the clusters of grape, and they bare it between their staff, and they brought of the pomegranates and the figs, and so on. And then in verse 26, and they went and came to Moses and Aaron, to all the congregation and the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran and Kadesh. And they brought back word unto them and all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Man, now we've got, you know, we have some really nice grapes. But can you imagine a cluster of grapes that it took two men to carry? Imagine what they would have been in awe when they saw that. And they told him, and they said, we came in the land where you sent us, and surely it flows with milk and honey, and the fruit of it is great. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land. The cities are walled and very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak and the Amalekites dwelt in the land in the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites, Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea. Now Caleb stilled the people before Moses, and he said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we're well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, we not be able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. I mean, we have to stop thinking about ourselves. Do you see what they're doing? They're stronger than we, but they're not stronger than God. And so Caleb tries to stay the people. He tries to settle them out. The next day they try to talk to people out of rebellion. But the people would have none of it. 14:7. And they spoke unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through and searched it is an exceedingly good land. And if the Lord delight in us, then he'll bring us into the land and give us a land which flows with milk and honey. Only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear you the people of the land, for they're bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. Man, that is so true today, you know. If God is with us, their strength is gone. He will aid us in whatever it is, the projects that we're trying to do, if we're trying to do it to glorify him. At this point, God is now furious with these people. You know, he told Moses, he said, I'm ready to just kill them all and restart with you. That's what he was saying. You know, and so God made a decision. He said, everyone 20 years and older is not going to go into the land. And then he killed everyone except Joshua and Caleb. They died that day of a plague, you know, for what they did. Now, have you seen people that go into congregations and they try to make negative remarks? They try to put other people down? You seen any of that? You see it all the time, you know. And so my point is that we've lost it. You know, we should be all united and we should all be going towards the kingdom together, arm in arm. And that's how I believed it was in the beginning until all this began to happen. And this is so destructive that what we're doing. We've lost our vision. It's somewhere else. We have other things on our mind, like who's more important, who's more right than the other, you know, which group to be with, you know. Is that one guy said to us, I loved your book, you know, I saw the truth of it and everything, but, you know, my friend told me if I leave this group or anything, then, you know, when the call to go to a place of safety comes, I won't be able to go. If God wants you to go to a place of safety, you're going to go to a place of safety no matter what. Nothing can stop him, and nothing will, and if we're faithful to him, he's going to protect us, and he's going to save us. We might go through some trials to perfect us, but we can count on we're going to come out of those trials different people, a different mindset, the people that know how to love, and we're going to eventually be like God is, and all-powerful and righteous. Anyway, I hope you see the point here. They went out, and they brought back the grapes. And they went out and they brought back the pomegranates. And they brought back all this about milk and honey. This is like the best land you'll ever see. They brought back something else. What do you think they brought back? Fear. They brought back fear and introduced fear into the congregation. We don't have to have any fear. Remember, fear not, little flock. It's our good God's pleasure to give you the kingdom. We don't need to have fear with this. So here's these people taken out of slavery. Here's these people go through the Red Sea. They see the sea close on the Egyptians, and they bring back fear. It's almost ridiculous when you think about it. Well, I know we're not them. But we do the same thing. We do the same thing. That promised land that he was going to give them is a type. It's our type. All of those things were written for us. It's our type of the kingdom that we're seeking. And we are now wandering through our own wilderness of sin, if you will, and we're headed towards that kingdom. You know, and as we travel, some will say, I don't want to go that way. Others want to go their own way, and they want to decide for themselves how to apply God's law. And that's why this entire story was written for us. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 7. Neither be you idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written. The people sat down to eat and to drink, and they rose up to play. You know, right now, entertainment is the biggest thing we've got going in America, and people are entertaining themselves with movies and with restaurants and with doing stuff, and they're covering up what's really important in life by just keeping their life filled. It's just no different than those Germans that were singing louder and louder and louder so you didn't see what's really happening to our country. You know, we just keep entertaining ourselves. Okay, verse 8, neither let us commit fornication as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Think of that, man. You know, most of us read this and we think, well, this would never apply to us. My point is, again, it's written for us. You know, and all of us sin in one way or another. And I want to admit that I've sinned myself. But I also am not judging anyone. But I want you to know that there are traps out there. And one of the reasons I know is because, and I'm just naming a few. You know, we think that, oh, fornication isn't going to be an issue for us in the church. But I knew a church member who was seen coming out of strip joints. A deacon was arrested for visiting a house of prostitution, one I knew. An evangelist was videotaped forcing himself on a masseuse. We all know about that. I think it's probably still on the internet. But my point is, you know, this is a very real thing right now. They are selling tomato ketchup, or they're selling milk using a girl in a bathing suit or something. I mean, you go down the street and I see these big billboards and they've got half-naked women on them, and I'm thinking it's a wonder we don't crash more often, you know, and we're gawking at this stuff. But it's everywhere in our world, and it has its effect on us, and it has an effect on our thinking. And God is saying, avoid all of this. Just stay faithful, just stay true, and keep it clean and keep it right. And that's what's going to make you the happiest in the end. It's not that it's just his rule and he wants it enforced. It is that this is what is best for us, and it's best for our good. So there's traps out there to watch out for. And then it says in verse 9, neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Now, this is a reference, I remember, to Korah and others challenging Moses. And there is a case where these men challenged Moses as the authority, and the earth opened up and swallowed them. I remember that case pretty well. And so we drew a line, and then everybody stand on this side, everybody stand on that side. But the point is, that's how severe it is to treat the people of God disrespectfully, to treat the deacons disrespectfully, to treat the elders disrespectfully, or the pastors disrespectfully. Who do we think we are? Who do we think we are, is what my point is. We should be respectful. And God is watching every single thing we do. And can't you just see us in the kingdom of God saying, you know, that guy got more than I, you know, he got more blessings than me, or more, you know, a greater reward than me, and I don't think he should have had it. It's never going to be there. He's not going to be there. You know, so why do it now? So that's part of my message today. Don't do it now. Don't do it now. And verse 10:10. Neither murmur you, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. Israel murmured against Moses and the bad report they brought upon the land. And today we have people who think nothing of mocking dignities. People that, you know, I know that people mock Mr. Armstrong, who's dead. Aren't they brave? Aren't they really brave? Mock someone, make fun of someone who's dead. But my point is, these things aren't unusual. They're all a part of the world you and I live in. And they happen to other churches just like they happen to us. I've talked to my wife, who's been in two other churches, and she says the same game is being played there as well. Verse 11, now these things happened unto them for an example, and they're written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. So these things aren't abstractions. These are literal things that we have to be careful about in our walk if we want to be in that kingdom. In verse 12, there's a reason for all of it. Therefore, let him that thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. Because there are people that think they stand, don't they? Remember that one guy that talked to us that he was the guy? He sent us a booklet and he said that he was the guy and that he that God was using and that he was the guy to follow and all. And I'm going, are you kidding me? You know, and all of his doctrine was wacky to a large degree. But people, you know, coming to you and saying that they are somebody, that just scares me to death, you know. I want to see some miracles from God or something or a more humble behavior. You know, I don't see any of the men of God down through the ages bragging about things or being braggadocio at all. So whoever we are, we may think that we're different than others. We may think that we're closer to God than others. We may think all kinds of things good about ourselves. Why? Well, because that's what human nature does. It makes us think we're okay. You know, it always does that. It always justifies something we do wrong, or it rationalizes something, doesn't it? The defense mechanism kicks in. So if you think you stand, take heed so that you don't fall from where you are. Let's go up. Life's a ladder. You're going up or down. Let's go up. Let's go up. Israelites were called. There's a great number of them. Many were there, but only a few made it into that promised land. And God says the same thing to us. He says that many are called, but few are chosen. You know, but my point is the people that went into that promised land were the people who carried a vision in their heart and in their mind, and they knew what that vision was, and they followed it, and they were passionate about it, you know, and so they made it. And so having a vision is more than looking on the bright side. It is looking on God's side. It's got to be that way. How does he see things, you know? And this takes effort. And it takes every day asking God, help me have your eyes. Help me see things the way you see them and put values on things the way you do and have the same standards and the same kinds of values that you have and that you want me to have to be in your kingdom. And I think that's what we need to do. John 14, by the way. John 14. It takes time and it takes effort and it takes spending time in prayer to be able to do that. But believe me, he will. He will give you that. He'll give you insight. I remember when I was reading about Solomon and he was praying for what he wanted was to be wisdom. He said, how am I going to lead all these people? I'd be thinking the same thing. How do I do this? And so God asked him. He said, I'll give you a wish, you know. So he had this genie kind of syndrome there. And anyway, he asked for the wisdom. And God said, because you asked of this, I'm going to give you all the rest. You know, because this is the greatest thing to have. So why aren't we asking for it every day? Why aren't we beseeching God every day for more wisdom? We should, because it's one of the most important things to have, that we have the wisdom to see things the way they really are. So anyway, what propels us forward with faith? Don't let your heart be troubled in verse 1 of chapter 14. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it weren't so, I would have told you so. And I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, you may also be. And so, actually quoted the song instead of the verse. The point is that this is what he's saying. Look, can you imagine him building a place for us, for you, and for you, and for you? Can you imagine that? Preparing a place for you, and yet, I'll never make it, you know. I can't do this. You wouldn't want me, no. He's building a place for us, and it's only with great, great remorse that he would let somebody else take our crown. It would take us turning our nose on him, snubbing him and saying, I don't want you. I want this. Okay, and we talked about that and what was the unpardonable sin. But my point is, I want us to think about God preparing a place just for us. You know, that really is kind of a turn on for me, that God would know me and know exactly my insides, every single molecule of me, and he would know what I like best and what would please me the most, and he would go ahead and prepare a place for me like that, you know, building a new Jerusalem for us. And he's been working on that project for ages, and he won't stop until it's perfect like he is. That's how he is. That's its nature. That's his nature. He's a perfectionist. So why don't we try to be a little bit more of a perfectionist, I think, in life? This building is what everyone has always sought down through time. And it's interesting, even when the Israelites crossed the Red Sea and they made it across, I want us to just have a look at what they were singing about here. You remember the women took their timbrels and they began to sing and stuff. Who is like unto you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises and doing wonders? You stretched out your right hand, and the earth swallowed them. You in your mercy have led forth the people which you've redeemed. You've guided them in the strength under to your holy habitation. The people shall hear and be afraid. Sorrow shall take hold on the inhabitants of Palestina. Then the dukes of Edom shall be amazed. The mighty men of Moab, trembling, shall take hold upon them. All the inhabitants of Canaan shall melt away. Fear and dread shall fall upon them by the greatness of your arm, as they shall be still as a stone until your people pass over, O Lord, till your people pass over, which you have purchased. You shall bring them in and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which you have made for you to dwell in, the sanctuary, O Lord, that your hands have established. You think they didn't know? You think they didn't have any idea about a new Jerusalem? And a place that was a temple that God built with his own hands? They knew that. And that should be a part of what motivated them. But it must be what motivates us. It absolutely must be what motivates us. Let's go back to Hebrews 11. So he knew that, Moses did, and he talked to the people, and he told them about these things. We don't have every single word there, but when they sing that song, you know they knew. Hebrews 11. A place built with his own hands. That kind of is moving to me. I knew a deacon once who was a really wonderful man, and he asked me to come help him fix his air conditioner in his house, and it was the first time I'd ever been there. He actually made every single piece of furniture in that house. He made what the television sets in, you know, and what the VCR sets in. He made every one of those, the coffee tables. He made everything, and he just did it perfectly, and he was meticulous. And he took his time, and he did one piece of furniture at a time over 10 years. And it was just gorgeous to look at. And it expressed his personality. And I can just see us in the kingdom, you know, or humans under us in the kingdom enjoying that kind of life where they make a lot of their own things, you know, and they use their insight and their own mind and their own abilities and their vision to do so. So anyway, Moses knew of the future kingdom, and he had that vision in his mind. And in Hebrews 11 and verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should, after receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out not knowing where he went. By faith, he sojourned in a land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked, listen carefully, he looked for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Through faith, Sarah also received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. And so Christ is building that same place for us today. Moses knew about it. Abraham looked for that city. That's what drove him. That's what motivated him in his lifetime, and it's got to be what motivates us today. Can you think of anything that could be more beautiful? I don't think we can imagine how beautiful that is going to be, to have streets of gold and have a buildings made out of jewelry and set on foundations of emeralds and sapphires. And it's just going to be mind-boggling just to be a part of it. You know, can you imagine a pearl for a gate? You know, when they're talking about gate, they're not talking about your gate out in the backyard. You know, they're talking about a gate you can drive a big vehicle through if you had to, or you could carry some large stones or something to help build some park or whatever. These are big, so imagine a pearl the size of your wall here that would open up, you know. That's the kind of pearl we're talking about. And I believe that's what he said when he saw, you know, it's like a man who finds a pearl in the field and he buys the field so he can get the pearl. I know he's thinking of that, what the pearls are like in the gates, you know, that we'll be walking through. So anyway, my point is that place is going to be so stunning and so beautiful, and it's going to be inhabited by people who are holy, that can be trusted. You know, there is no better dream a person could possibly have. There is no better thing in life than what you and I have been offered. And we've been offered it, and some aren't taking it. Isn't that frightening to me? A little bit frightening that they are not taking it, that they're disregarding it, losing the vision of where we're headed and going off track. And this scares me for them. I don't want them to do that, you know. But that's the reason that God gave us the Sabbath. That's the reason he gave us the holy days. That's why we have them. We're about going into the fall holy day season. We've started it with trumpets, but you understand my point is that each one of these are a point of reference. Each one of these holy days is a step toward our destination. Each one shows a piece and a part of that plan. And why do we do it week after week? Why do we do it year after year? Why do we do the same days over and over and over? Can't you see God saying, so you'll get it? So that you'll sink the vision in your head? That's why we do it over and over and over again. I'm not trying to bore you. Trying to get it through my thick skull. Art, this is more valuable than what you think is valuable. This is better than you ever dreamed of, you know. And he wants every one of us, every one of us, to understand if God is for us, who can be against us? The trials in this life are nothing compared to what is coming in the future. That as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. That's what these things are for. Remind us of these points in life. We've got to keep that kingdom and Christ's righteousness fixed in our mind and never let down on our ideals, no matter how hard, no matter how difficult a situation may seem. Never, ever lose the vision. 1 John 3, fascinating scripture here. You know, as we keep these feasts, we should really drink in of their meaning, really understand them and their reality. You know, they're inspired by God, and this vision includes you. 1 John 3:1. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore, the world knows us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons and daughters of God, and it does not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we're going to be like him, for we'll see him as he is. And every man that has this hope purifies himself even as he is pure. Isn't that what the scriptures are saying over and over and over? Whoever commits sin transgresses also the law, for sin is a transgression of the law. Do you see it? Seek the kingdom and strive to keep God's commandments. That's it. That's it. You know, it's none of these other things. It's not, it has nothing to, you know, if you're wrong on the calendar, do you think God's going to get you for that? If you made a mistake on the calendar, if you make a mistake on some other crazy thing, you don't pronounce his name quite right because you got an accent. You know, isn't that foolish? All of that's foolishness. And he says it over and over again, keep the commandments. That's it. Keep the commandments the way he intended them to be kept, not as you might dream in your wild dreams sometimes. So anyway, listen, never give up on this vision. Never give up. Be confident in this one thing, that if he's called you and begun a good work in you, he's going to perform it until Christ comes, is what he says. So all we have to do is stay in that game. Just stay in it and don't forget it and keep remembering this. Continue studying God's word. Continue praying to him. Continue repenting of mistakes we make and not continuing to make them. Continue looking at these statutes. They're just, to me, are just incredible. If you wanted to build a city and you wanted to do things right, his statutes tell us how to do it and inculcate his law in our lives and strive to live by his values and standards. Never give up, I say. Never give up. Never give up on this vision that we have of the kingdom. If we really want it, do you think he would say no? If he really wanted it, no. If you were giving it your all against human nature, against the pulls of this world, and against the pulls of Satan, the devil, and you were doing your best, do you think he wouldn't do it? Give it to you? Of course he would. Of course he would. That's the kind of people everybody wants in a job or anything. You know, yeah, you may make some mistakes, but if you really want it, you'll eventually get there in every case. You know, so all of the people in heaven, all of the angels are going to be assembled one day, and God is going to bring down this new Jerusalem, and there's going to be rejoicing and singing. And I just can't imagine what it would be like to have millions of angels singing and us singing, and a grand ceremony as he has created a new heavens and a new earth that is going to be a massive earth. And then he brings down New Jerusalem for us, and we get to explore it and see it and be shown that this is your office. This is your office. You'll be over here, you know. This dream needs to live inside us. It's got to be a part of the fabric of our being, brethren, and it's got to be what motivates us. We've got to see this as a reality, and I say nothing is more important. Nothing is more grand. Nothing is more valuable than this. And let us strive to remain faithful to this vision that dwells in our mind. Because with the help of God, not just on our own, but if we're seeking it and asking God for help, with the help of God, we can and will attain it. Hang on to that vision and let that vision motivate our lives.